on the talk to the Linden Deanery on November 5th, 2000. I just want to thank all of you for asking me to be here. My husband was so thrilled when I was asked to come speak because, of course, this is his home parish. He says, make sure to tell those ladies this is my home parish. So I said I would. All of us here, I'm sure, has a faith story to share of some sort and somehow where God has been present in your life and or you experienced this with someone who is close to you. And that is what brings me here today, a faith story. And as Rose had said, that I had witnessed the power of God's love during a trial in my life, and that's what I want to share with you today. Just a little background about myself. I am from Okul Junction, and I grew up in a Catholic home. I have an older brother, three younger sisters, and a younger brother. And after high school, I went to UNL and was active in the Catholic Student Center, which is known as the Newman Center, and that's where I met Chris. Chris and I were married after I finished nursing school, and through the years, we had just always made it a priority to be active in our parishes. It was either that or we just, I guess, maybe could never say no. I don't know. But we were always, that was just our priority in our life, just to be active. And our faith has always been important to us. And we just felt called to be actively involved in the church. As it was mentioned, I have five boys, Adam, Nathan, Ben, Sam, and Joe. And we have a very busy household. In 1997, Chris and I attended a parish retreat, which is called Sine. Maybe some of you have heard about it. It's a retreat that is parish-based. And the experience of this unique retreat drew both of us closer to God and especially to people in our parish. And we each felt that it was a retreat that would prepare us for things to come in our life. And, you know, the process of growing close to God is, for us, was something that just didn't happen overnight. We didn't have some big conversion. It was something that just happened over the years, and we just came to the understanding that God was always calling us closer to Him and wanting, and He always wanted to be in greater control of our lives. In December of 1997, Chris was at our Eucharistic Adoration Hour, and he prayed to God, Lord, you have given me a great life, but is this all there is? I'm 40 years old, and I know you want more from me. Show me what you want from me. I am ready. He had been praying like this for several months, and of course I wasn't aware of it until months later. In January of 1998, I was helping with the CNA retreat in David City. And at this weekend, I found myself saying over and over again, we never know what tomorrow may bring. Everything may be great today, but tomorrow things could change. That is why we must always be prepared for whatever God has planned for us. And it was at this retreat I asked God, Lord, how do you want me to evangelize for you? Is it through these retreats, or is there more? Reveal your plan for me. I am ready. And I am ready to do whatever you want me to do. On the way home from the retreat, I really had this feeling that God was going to reveal something to me. And I was excited, but I was a bit afraid. And then a little more than a week later, Chris and I found out that God did have a challenge for us. On January 27, 1998, our 12-year-old son Nathan was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Now, my story today is a two-part story. One is Nathan's story, and the other is my story. And I would love to tell you all of Nathan's stories, but there isn't enough time. And so we're just going to kind of combine the two. Nathan was a kid who loved life. He loved to have fun, and he loved to laugh. He He was strong and athletic. He was a great ball player, and he was a great friend, and he had a big heart. He loved little kids, especially his little brothers, and he was always a great spiritual kid, and he loved Jesus. I'll never forget the night. I think he was around 8 years old. I went up to his bedroom, and I found him crying. And I said, "Nathan, why are you crying?" And he said that he had seen Jesus. You know, I think about that all the time. I want to make one comment before I even start, and that is that Nathan dealt with this his physical suffering and loss in a way that we would have never predicted. For a 12-year-old, the way that he handled his cross was unimaginable. It really was. On the day that Nathan's tumor was diagnosed, the doctor had ordered an MRI. Nate was worried, and he'd asked me, "Mom, what's the worst thing that could happen to me?" And I told him, "Well, you could have a brain tumor." So you can all imagine how I felt when I had to tell him it was a brain tumor. Being a nurse, I tried to be very professional. As the doctors were showing me the MRIs, I was agreeing with them. And all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I thought, I'm a mom now. And I have to hear this just like any other parent. And now I have to go tell my son. From that moment, God asked people to care for us. It was at that very moment. We made plans to transport Nathan to the Iowa University Hospital where surgeons could tell us more about the tumor and decisions regarding surgery. Chris was away. He was on a business trip, and he had to be told. And he was going to meet us in Iowa City. And a close friend drove all the way to Omaha to meet him in the middle of the night and drive him to Iowa City. Nathan and I drove home from the hospital to prepare for the trip to Iowa. People immediately started to call or to stop by. I was just home for about 5 minutes, and the doorbell rang, and somebody was there wanting to help. I have no idea how they found out. It was just amazing how fast people found out and were willing to help us. Later, Monsignor Pleskoch arrived, and together, and then also more people arrived. We had like 20 people show up. Together we prayed as Monsignor anointed Nathan. You know, to think that this boy who was once so healthy was all of a sudden receiving the sacrament of the sick was overwhelming. You know, and the reality of it hit me really hard. But I was not alone. I took a moment and I looked around the room and I saw all these people. And the room was full of people. It was really something. God had sent Monsignor and these people to be with me and to give me hope, and I needed them. And during this time, God's words came to me. Do not be afraid. I am with you. I felt a warmth come over me, and it was like God was wrapping his arms around me and holding me. These words gave me so much comfort and peace, and it was the strength that I needed to go on this journey alone with Nathan. At around 4:30 in the morning in the fog, we arrived in Iowa City in the ambulance. We would be there for the next 15 and a half days. On our first day there, Nate asked me, "Why did this have to happen to me? I'm just a little kid." We both cried. You know, what could I say? What do you say? Finally, some words came to me. And I said, "Nate, I don't know why this had to happen to you. Nobody knows. You know, in fact, we probably will never know why. But why not you? God chose you, and he must feel that you are strong and courageous, and that you are the only person that could handle this. Besides, who would you rather have this happen to?" We have to be open to God's plan for us, and he will take care of us And there are so many people praying for you right now. And I promise you that I will never leave you alone. I will be there through everything. Only God could have given me the wisdom to say that. It helped Nate so much that he never asked why again. The first night at the hospital, I was exhausted. I fell into a deep sleep. And around 2 o'clock in the morning, something woke me up. I looked around the room, and no one was in the room, and Nathan was sleeping soundly. All of a sudden, I felt God's presence. I burst into tears, and I cried long and hard. And I asked God, "Why, Nate, Lord? He is such a great kid. He could do so many things for you." You know, when God gives us children, we go through life raising them in a way that we feel is right, and we have a plan for them, more or less. And we see their talents, and we try to help them use them. And so then when God asks something else of them, we say, "Why?" Nathan had so many wonderful gifts and talents, and we wanted him to use them for God's glory. Anyway, when this happened, we had to give up our dreams for Nathan, and this was not a very easy thing to do. And then I thought back to my prayer. I asked God, "Is this the answer to my prayer? Is this what you had in mind for me?" I didn't want to believe it. In my heart, I knew the answer was yes. I thought back to the story of Abraham and Isaac, and I remember how God had asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. And this story has always been hard for me to understand. You know, how could anyone sacrifice their son even for God? What a strong man he must have been. Abraham was so obedient and faithful to God. He did everything he was told. And then I remembered that right before he was going to sacrifice his son, God spared him. And I thought to myself, I must do this. If I'm obedient and I am faithful to God, then maybe God will spare Nathan. Maybe he will heal him. Maybe he will grant him a miracle. So then I prayed, "God, I too will be obedient to you. I surrender my son to you. Do with him as you will." Then I turned to Mary and I said, "Mary, you said yes to God when he asked something great of you. You didn't know what to expect, but you said yes. Help me to say yes to God for whatever he wants of me." And then I prayed a rosary like I had never prayed before. I just felt as if I was directly speaking to God face to face. I finally fell asleep, and in the morning when I awoke, I thought about the night, and I wasn't sure if it was a dream or if it was real, but all I know was that a great sense of peace had come over me. The day before the surgery, Nate received a phone call from his friend, Andy, and Andy had shared with him that he and another friend had shaved their heads. This meant so much to Nate because that was his number one concern out of everything, was that he was going to have his head shaved. And so to hear that his two friends had already done it was pretty special for him. And in fact, later the whole class of boys shaved their heads. And one morning during school mass, the boys were all walking in with these little bald heads, and Monsignor noticed this, and he was troubled, and he said to somebody, "You know, what's going on here with all these kids?" And they informed him that they had done it for Nathan. You know, everyone was affected by this small act of sacrifice. The night before surgery, Chris and Adam and I prayed with Nate, and with all our might, we asked God to spare him and to heal him. And after we were done praying, we asked Nate if he had any a special prayer request. And Nate said, "Yeah, I want to pray for all of those who are having surgery who don't have anybody praying for them. The next morning, the 6:30 a.m. Mass at St. Joe's was offered for Nate. And this was on the feast day of the Presentation of Our Lord. And we were later told that it was a foggy morning. And the cars were just coming into the parking lot out of this fog. And they just kept coming and coming. And the church was packed. You know, there's no doubt in our mind that God loved us. As the nurses wheeled Nathan away from us into the operating room that morning, we felt helpless knowing that he could die in surgery. As a mother, I felt as if my heart just walked away. Chris and I feared God would call him home that day, but together we surrendered our will to his. And when we were in the waiting room, all we could do and all we wanted to do was to pray. You know, it didn't matter if there were other people around us. We just said a rosary together. It was just so important to us. And while we were sitting there, a care package arrived from Lincoln. Inside were gifts to comfort us, holy water, a special prayer, a book about miracles, something for Nathan. Again, it was just another sign to us that God loved us. Things like this happened all the time. We never felt abandoned by God. In fact, only loved more and more every day. A few hours later, we rejoiced when we found out the surgery was successful. It was such a gift to see Nathan talking and moving around after his surgery. It was like a miracle. During our long stay in the hospital, in a town I had never been to, in fact, I didn't even know where it was in Iowa. People just whom we began to think of as angels just kept coming in our room and introducing themselves to us. Each someone somehow had a connection to someone that we knew or a family member, and they just arrived on regular intervals. And it was, you know, of course, we thought only God could have orchestrated it. And they just were there and offered us anything we needed, you know, food or lodging or use of their laundry equipment. It was just amazing. Another gift was that my sister Diane lived only an hour from Iowa City. And Diane lived with us during the summer that when I was pregnant with Nathan. This was during her college year, the summer of her college year. And she was living with us at the time of his birth, and she helped me out so much. And so she has always had a real special bond to Nathan. And so for her to be the one who was able to be with us during the stay at the hospital was truly in God's plan. She was there once again to take care of us. And one thing that I have learned through this whole experience is that there are no coincidences in life. Everything happens for a reason. We received many balloons and flowers and cards during this day, and it just meant so much to us. The room was full. In fact, people would walk by and they would think that it was the hospital gift shop. And but those cards and everything that was sent to us meant so much to me and to Nathan. You know, it didn't matter what the card said. It just mattered to me that people cared. Nate received a lot of religious items at the time as well. And so we made a big shrine, and it became the focal point of the room. And it was just such a great comfort to have this in our room. And later when we returned to Lincoln, it was so great because even though his prognosis was poor, we had great hope. And we wanted everyone to see him. When I returned home, I gathered strength to tell myself that, you know, I can do it all. I can take care of Nathan. I can take care of my family. I could be Superwoman. And when people would call, I would say, you know, we're doing fine, and I thank them for thinking of us. After several days of being at home, I finally realized that there was just no way that I could do everything. Because Nathan needed so much care himself. And so I finally came to that realization. You know, but why is it that we find it so easy to give but so hard to receive? You know, isn't that true? We are so self-sufficient. I don't know, is it a sign of weakness when we have to receive from others? And I'm not talking about everyday life situations. I'm talking about when we really need the help. You know, when we ask God for help, do we expect to see this old man with the long white beard come knocking at our door, ready to help us? You know, God can only work through people. The corporal works of mercy came to my mind, and I thought about the one especially to visit the sick. I was humbled and I thought, who am I? Who am I to deny these people the right to help our family? People who are trying to do an act of mercy. They were only trying to do God's work. You know, people want to help. And maybe through their work, God is trying to teach them something. So with humility, I had to let go. And I prayed to God, God, you know my needs better than I do. I will accept whatever you want to give me. I had to let others graciously help with whatever they wanted to do. You know, and it was the best thing I ever did. It was like God picked me up and carried me through the whole situation. I recalled the poem entitled Footprints, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. The last sentences are, the Lord replied, my precious child, I love you, and I would never leave you during your times of trial and suffering. When you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. And that is exactly what I experienced. You know, every encounter that we have, every day in our life, is for a reason. The Spirit moves people to do things. You know, when we hear of someone in need, something inside of us is telling us to do something. You know, I should take a meal over to that family. I should send them a card. I should stop over to visit them. I should give them a phone call. That is the Holy Spirit encouraging us to do something for someone else. And so we should react. And this is something that I have learned, and I am now so much more aware of the power that God gives each of us. And by letting others help out, the greatest joy I received was being able to spend time with Nathan and love him as much as I could. And I'm so very thankful now for that opportunity. Every day, every week, Nate gave up the gifts that God had given to him one at a time. And it was a gradual thing that just happened over time. He steadily grew weaker, he lost his hearing, and little by little he lost his eyesight. He had to give up his hair because of the chemotherapy and the use of his left hand. And finally, he gave up his ability to walk. But he never lost his sense of humor, and he never lost his faith. In fact, those two became the most important to him. As he gave up his gifts one at a time, the ones that he had left became very important to him. And the amazing thing that he never complained about what he had lost. You know, here is a boy who could see everything once and now could struggle to see, and he didn't complain about it. This always has amazed me, even to this day, when I think back on that, how he handled that. He adapted so well to his blindness that he was even able to joke about it. One day, my cousin's son came over for a visit, and he had noticed that there was he said to Nate, Nate, I noticed that there was a Honda motorcycle in your garage. And Nate said, yep. And Derek said, well, do you ever ride it? And Nate said, nope. They like to keep us visually impaired off the roads. Only God could have given him the peace and acceptance he had. God gave him hope. Nate believed for a long time that he would get better and that his eyesight would come back. In fact, when I see Betsy, I remember a time, it was Easter time, and Nathan was sitting and talking to Brian. And Nate was telling Brian, he said, you know, these doctors don't really know if I'm going to get my eyesight back or not, but I know I am. By fall, I'm going to be able to see again. You know, that was the incentive that kept him going. But more important than his hope to regain his health was just his willingness to accept. I could see that as he steadily, you know, lost his physical abilities, he steadily became more powerful. People would come over to visit us to try to comfort him and would leave more filled just by being in his presence. This happened every day. He always had great hope because he knew that God could do anything, anytime. As a kid, he was so mature spiritually. At nighttime, at bedtime, we had a special ritual, and I would bless Nate's head and his eyes every night with holy water that we had received from Fatima and Lourdes and Medjugorje. And Nate always wanted me to say, "Jesus, heal Nathan." And sometimes I would mess up and I would say, "Bless Nathan," and he would quickly remind me to say, "Heal." One afternoon, Nathan and I were watching TV, and this wasn't on the Catholic channel, but it's just on a different channel on TV. We came upon this show that was about the apparitions of Mary. And people were sharing how they had visited the sites of Mary. And one lady was telling how she drank the water and she was miraculously healed. And so after the show, Nate said, "So that's what's wrong." And it startled me, and I said, "What? What, Nate? What are you talking about?" And he said, "I'm not drinking the water." And I asked him if he wanted to, and he said yes. So he did. Was he superstitious? No, he just had hope. And he knew that God could do anything. And even if he didn't, even if a miracle didn't happen, it just never changed his faith. Another important part of Nathan's day was receiving Holy Communion. Sometimes he didn't feel well, but he would rarely miss a chance to receive the Blessed Sacrament. It gave him strength. And I know that he received many graces because of it. During his illness, his schoolmates learned about life and death and struggles. Together, they had shared a cross, a purpose. They contributed to God's plan. When Nathan was going through chemotherapy, he had a lot of difficult changes. He basically ended up looking like a different kid. And one time he returned to school for a visit, and his friends all gathered around him, and they were so happy to see him, but they didn't know quite what to say. And so Nathan could feel this, and he wanted everybody to be comfortable, so all of a sudden he said, "Hey, do you want to hear a story?" And they all said yes, and for about an hour he sat and told them stories. And they all listened and they laughed. At that point, they realized that he hadn't changed that much. The kids were great. They searched for ways to help him in any way that they could. The boys, they would bring over food, which Nathan loved. And the girls, they volunteered their time to babysit Ben and Sam during the summer when we had to run up to Omaha every day for radiation. His friends never abandoned him. When school started back in the fall, Nathan was determined to be in school. He wanted to be his friend, to be with his friends, and it was going to be much difficult. It was going to be much more difficult because of his blindness, but that didn't matter. He wanted to prove to everyone that he could still be a student and attend school. And in fact, his goal was to get all A's. And when I would take him to school every day, it was really hard for me to leave him there. But these kids were so happy to see him. And every time he would come, they would just jump up and gather around him and help him in any way that they could. You know, I could just see the mercy flowing from these children. It was just so beautiful. On a day in October, Nathan had a focal seizure, and we had to take him to an ambulance to Omaha, to Children's Hospital, for him to be evaluated. An MRI showed that the tumor had returned, and not only returned, but in additional areas in the brain. Nothing more could be done, and it was evident now that Nathan would die. Chris and I had to tell Nathan. We just prayed and knew that we would know when the right time was. Nathan had to be sedated because of his seizure, so he was not aware of anything that had happened. But later that night, he woke up and he asked, "Why did I have that seizure?" This was the time to tell him. The tumor came back, Nate. We all cried and just held each other tight. He cried for about 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden he stopped and he dried his tears and he said, "Well," he told us where he wanted to be buried. He told me what he wanted me to do with his clothes. He told me what he wanted me to do with all of his money. You know, Chris and I just couldn't believe it. I thought for sure that this was going to be the final blow, and this was going to put him in depression and withdrawal. But it didn't happen. Instead, here we found ourselves not dwelling on the death, but instead talking about the joy of going to heaven. During the middle of the night, Nate woke up and he asked me, "So, how long do I have?" I told him that I didn't know. I said, "Only God knows, Nathan." And I said, "Besides, you know, God can do anything. He could take you if he wants, or he could grant a miracle." And he said to me, "Oh, Mama, I just want to go to heaven." He had accepted the outcome and was ready to move on. He knew he had to be strong. And what was unbelievable was how he maintained his sense of humor. In the morning, several doctors and interns and nurses kept coming in and waking him up. And after about the fifth time of being awakened, Nate was fed up. He'd had it. And he rolled over and he said, "I must be in hell." And then he rolled over and his head turned toward me and he said, "Mama, is that you? What are you doing here?" He had an amazing way of de-emphasizing his trouble, and he always made me laugh. At the time when I should have been distraught, I was laughing. You know, that's one of the things I miss most about him was his laughter. Nathan had 6 weeks to live, and those 6 weeks flew by fast. Every second, every minute, every hour was so important to us, and we absorbed everything Nate did. We were always at his beck and call, and when he spoke, we listened. God had filled him with so much faith, hope, and charity that we felt his every word was a message from God. His days and nights were all mixed up, and he would often wake us up in the middle of the night wanting to talk. And we wanted to be alert and to listen to what he had to say. It was just like he had this direct line to God, and everything he said was so profound. One night he woke me up and he asked, "Mom, what are you going to do without me? Who will tell you that you're a good cook? Who will make sure to have Ben and Sam say please and thank you? Who will sing to you?" And he went on and on with these questions. The tears just rolled down my face. And inside of me, I didn't know what I was going to do without him, and I didn't want him to leave. But I said, "Nate, you will always be with me. When I hear music, I will think of you. When I cook, I will think of you. When the boys do say please and thank you, I will think of you." And I said, "Just think how many people you will be able to be with when you're up in heaven. You will be able to do more up in heaven than you will ever be able to do here on earth." And then he went on to talk about how busy he was going to be when he got to heaven. He was going to be able to do things that he had not been able to do for a long time. And so he looked so forward to that. We talked a lot about heaven with Nathan. Chris read him a book that was titled Someday Heaven many times. And Nathan liked this book. And when Chris would read it to him, it was just like he could visualize everything that Chris was saying to him. One night, Chris had asked the boys, "So what do you think about Nathan going to heaven?" And of course, it just startled the boys being asked that question, and they said, "I don't know." And then Chris turned to Nathan and he said, "Nate, what do you think?" And Nate said, "Well, I'm pretty darn glad." He said, "This is a dark world." He said, "When I get to heaven, I'm going to be able to run and play baseball and do all the things I can't do now." He was so focused on heaven and never complained about his faith. And it was so amazing. He just gave us so much strength. Nathan had a major part in planning his funeral and burial, and he wanted to plan it. I think, you know, most kids probably wouldn't want to have anything to do with it, but not Nate. He wanted to be there when we were planning anything. One thing I want to share with you is about how we had to go pick out a cemetery plot. This was going to be emotionally hard, difficult, you know, finding a place to bury your son. And I think Nate knew that it was going to be hard for us, so he wanted to make it easy. When it was time to go there, he immediately tried to keep things light. Before we left, we got Nathan ready, and he was sitting outside in his wheelchair. And Chris's mom, Eileen, drove up, and she noticed Nate was sitting outside. And she said, "Nathan, are you going somewhere?" And Nate said, "Yep, we're going grave hunting, Grandma." Then when we were at the cemetery, he had several requests. He didn't want to be buried under a tree because he didn't want a dog to come along and pee on his grave. He didn't want to be buried in the shade. He wanted to be buried out in the open so the sun would shine down on his grave. And then, this is October, so he kept asking Chris if at Halloween he would get a fake hand and stick it out of the grave. And finally, I promised him that he would, just so that he would stop talking about that. When we finally found a spot, we left Nathan sitting in his wheelchair, and Chris and I went over to visit some other graves that were close by. I looked up, and I saw Nathan, and he was sitting in his chair, and he was singing, "Oh, Mr. Sun, Sun, Mr. Golden Sun, please shine down on me." And he finished that song, and then he went into, "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray." And he finished the song. Now, Chris and I just looked at each other and said, "That's it. That's where we're going to bury our son." You know, I thank Nate every day for doing that, because now every time I go out to his grave to visit, I can always see him sitting in that little wheelchair singing those songs. The last 2 days of Nate's life were the holiest days of my life. I have never before felt so close to God. Our little house felt like a church. The day before Nate died, all of his friends came to say goodbye to him. Each had a chance. We gave them each a chance to talk to him privately on a one-to-one situation. And in a 10-month time, these kids went from, "We miss you, Nate," to, "We love you, Nate." Nathan, he couldn't speak back to them at this point, but I know he heard every word that they said to him. They walked out of the house with tears in their eyes, knowing that they'd never speak to him again. Our family surrounded us that day, and many people stopped by to tell Nathan goodbye. At 10 o'clock at night, Monsignor Kalin, he's a retired priest now, rolled into our driveway and announced, "We're going to have Mass." You know, it was so touching to see this man who now suffers from Parkinson's come into our house in a wheelchair, so determined. His voice is barely audible, his hands are shaky, and he wanted to say one last Mass for Nathan. And again, it was just something that we know that fit into God's plan, because Monsignor had joined Chris and I in holy matrimony. And here he was going to share this last Mass with us as we were going to prepare to lose our child. You know, this was just another sign of God's love for us. It was so powerful. After the Mass, Nathan's breathing, which had been so heavy and difficult, for several hours was all of a sudden very easy. And it remained so during the night. Chris was going to sit with him, and I was going to sleep. But as I tried to sleep, I couldn't. So I had to have Chris go to sleep because it was the nurse in me. I just knew that he might not be aware of approaching death, the signs that accompany that. And so,
to continue, please turn this tape over now and press play.
And then I did what any other mother would do who was concerned about their child during the night, something that I had done many times. I crawled in bed beside Nate, and I wrapped my arms around him, and I held him close to me. And I wanted to be aware of his every move and his every breath. As I held him, I remembered the day when he was born and how I held him in my arms for the very first time. You know, oh, what a gift God had given me that day. You know, it was like God had reached down from heaven and handed me this new son. What a miracle. As I reflected on this memory, I finally came to an understanding what a miracle was. And that was to have a son who was so full of God's love for 13 wonderful years. I was holding my child, my son, for a few more hours before God would take him home to him. And I have no words to explain to you how that felt. I thought of Mary and how she must have felt when she knew her son was going to leave her. To me, he seemed so much like Jesus because through his suffering, he had been purified and made perfect. We both slept through the night, and in the morning around 6:30, his breathing changed and became difficult again. He would go on to live another 14 hours. That night, the night he died, something remarkable happened. And before I explain this to you, I have to share two things with you. First was that I've always had a devotion to St. Teresa the Little Flower. And she is the saint who sends roses down from heaven. And I had prayed to her during Nate's illness, and he prayed to her as well. And the second thing was that Chris had told me during the day that he just knew Nathan was not going to die unless a priest was present. Well, as I had said, he lived for 14 hours, so we had no idea when it was going to happen. So what happened, minutes before Nathan died, the doorbell rang. And the doorbell did not ring. Eileen had just noticed a boy standing at the door. And so she went to the door and she opened it and he handed her a bouquet of roses. And he said, "These are for Nathan." And she noticed that there wasn't a card on it. And so he again told her that they were for Nathan. So she brought them in. And I had been sitting at Nathan's bedside all day, and so I was hesitant to leave. But I went over and I took the roses and I brought them over to Nathan and I said, "Nate, these roses are for you. These are your roses." And then I quickly went up into the kitchen and I was arranging them in a vase and the doorbell rang. And it was Father Hazuka, who just happened to stop by. And so then I met him down at the bedside, Nathan's bedside. And at that moment, Nathan died. We didn't realize what had happened until later when we reflected on the event. You know, it was like St. Teresa was there to escort him to heaven. God had sent the roses and a priest to comfort us at the moment of his death. It has been almost 2 years now since we have lost Nathan, and we feel his loss every day. But we also feel his presence. Many things have happened since then, and I will share a few. After Nathan died, we felt a real void in our family and realized that three kids were just not enough for our family. We always wanted to have more, and Nathan always wanted us to have more. And in fact, he would always tell me, "Mom, we need more kids." When he was sick, once he asked me, "Mom, when are you going to have another baby?" And I told him, "Oh, Nate, you know, we don't know. I don't know." I said, "Besides, we just have to leave it in God's hand." And he paused for a moment and he said, "Well, listen to me. God has been talking to me and he told me to tell you it's time." So 4 months after Nathan's death, after I learned I was pregnant, I was told that my due date was on Halloween. And that just happened to be Nathan's favorite holiday. Our little Joel was born just before Halloween on October 27th, and we just celebrated his first birthday. And he's been a tremendous joy to our family. And I tell him all about Nathan, and I show him his pictures. Another story is something we discovered on the anniversary of Nathan's death. And first I'll give you a little background. During the summer, when Nathan was sick, Chris and Nate were watching a show on EWTN. And it was about St. Catherine Labore. And Mary appeared to her, and she is a saint that Mary had asked her to make a medal in her honor. And she told St. Catherine that those who wear this medal will receive many graces. So St. Catherine did what she was told, and a medal was made. And many miracles appeared with those who wore the medal. Finally, this medal was known as the Miraculous Medal. After the show, Nathan told Chris that he wanted to have a medal. So Chris went out and he got a medal for him. He found the most expensive, the nicest medal he could find, and he gave it to Nate. And when Chris gave him this medal, it was unbelievable to see him. It was just like giving somebody a drink of water who was so thirsty. Nate just loved it. And he wore it every day until he died. We knew that how important this medal was to him, and so we had a Miraculous Medal put on his grave marker. And also, right after Nathan died, Adam, our oldest son, asked for his medal. He knew how special it was to him. Well, on the anniversary of Nate's death, I was watching EWTN. It was Thanksgiving a year ago. The anniversary was on Thanksgiving. And on the Catholic Almanac, it stated that today is the feast day of St. Catherine Labore. I couldn't believe it. Nathan had died on her feast day, and I didn't even know it until a year later. Because we knew Nate would want us to, we gave each of his 24 cousins and his 51 classmates a Miraculous Medal. In fact, it was the very same one that he had. It was just like it. And it was something that would help them remember him and to remember all of those, the love that they had showered onto him. And in fact, just a couple weeks ago, a classmate's mother was sharing a story with me, and she told me that her daughter, who was preparing to run in the state cross-country meet, was getting ready to leave home, and all of a sudden she said, "I forgot my Miraculous Medal." And so she had to run into the house to get her medal. And then she also, her mother told me that she prayed to Nathan during her run. Well, she got fourth place at state as a freshman. So those kids still hold Nathan close to their hearts, and it's just pretty amazing. Another story was that Bill Ron, Chris's cousin, had started attending the Catholic Church. And I know that Nathan had a big impact on this decision. Well, he teaches sixth grade CCD class now. And a couple weeks ago, he had a Nathan Ron day. And the theme of the day was how to have faith and courage during times of trials. And so he shared three of Nathan's articles with the class, and then he asked each one of them to take Nathan's advice sheet, and that's what I had handed out to you, and to pick one advice, and then they were going to go around the room and read it. And he shared with us how excited they were to read their piece of advice. It was almost like that they had made it up themselves. And then something else that has happened was that Bishop Basha, who was a priest in Lincoln, was ordained or was made a bishop last January. And he wrote a beautiful article in the Catholic Register based off of Nathan's advice. And so now Nathan, here he's touching people in the state of Oregon. And there's a lot of other stories that I could share with you. But a few months after Nathan had died, I was at our Eucharistic Adoration Hour, and I was missing Nate so much. You know, I just wanted to hold him again, to see him again, just to talk to him and to hear him talk to me. And my heart just ached for him. And then I heard a voice inside of me say, "That is how I want you to feel about me. To desire me, for your heart to ache for me." Then I understood. This is what Jesus is calling me to do. He wants me to have the desire to be with him in heaven, to want to see him face to face, for my heart to ache for him just as it aches for Nathan. So that is my prayer. Every day I start my day and offer it to God, and I want whatever he wants of me. I want to desire to be with him. I'm no longer afraid to die. In fact, I'm sure it won't happen soon enough. Chris feels the same way. And even our oldest son, Adam, said that he no longer was afraid to die, and he would be glad to go through what Nathan did just to be where he was. And he was 15 at the time, and, you know, that's pretty amazing for someone that age to say. Be not afraid. Be not afraid. These are not my words, but they are God's words. He has spoken these words to us over and over. If you would read in the Bible, it is written over 300 times. Pope John Paul II began his papacy with this theme, be not afraid, and he carries it on today. And in fact, he states, and I quote, "Be not afraid. These are the words of the church today." So I encourage each of you, be not afraid to live your faith. Be not afraid to be excited about your faith and to share it with others. Be not afraid to ask what God wants of you and to surrender your life to him. Be not afraid to have sufferings in your life, for God is only asking you to be closer to him. Be not afraid to be holy, because we're all called to be saints. And the one thing that I want to also leave you with is that from now on, whenever you say the Lord's Prayer, a prayer that you have said countless of times, I want you to focus in on the words, "Thy will be done," and let it speak from your heart. For only when we let go and let God can we attain peace and happiness in this life.